Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Geekable. My name is Enes, and today Nick will not be joining us, unfortunately, but we have a very special guest. We have Dustin Nelson with us here today, an indie creator and writer and poet and columnist? Yeah. I'm very excited to get to know you and meet you, Dustin. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's sunny out, and we're talking comics. Things are going well today. I'm excited. I love the show.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to have you here with us. And, you know, I'm excited about your graphic novel. Or is it a one-shot or is it a mini-series? Tell me about...
Three-issue mini-series.
So for those listening, Dustin is currently funding Magda Skeleton Maker, which is literally one of the most good-looking books I've seen out there, honestly, in recent years. So I'm very excited for it, and I hope many of you are. And Dustin is here to tell us about it. So... please.
Yeah, so we're funding the first issue right now on Kickstarter, as you do in comics. So the story about Magda, who has some different kind of vision. She kind of goes in and out of a view where she sees things in a sort of static. And that's just something she's dealt with her whole life. She meets a neighbor and... you know, she lives at a bit of a remove from everyone and hits this point where she's kind of looking out the window, and it's kind of how she views the world a lot, and sees the neighbor doing something in her apartment with some other people. And this sort of portal opens up, and what she calls the light beast comes through it. And she slowly realizes she can only see it when she has this sort of static problem happening, and that no one else is able to see it. So she's kind of this story kind of jumps off from that, of like there's this thing she doesn't know how to deal with, because she's also not sure who to turn to as someone who's kind of lives at a distance from a lot of people, because who's really gonna, like, has enough issues with explaining what's happening with her in general to say there's like this demon out there that only I can see, isn't like something police or neighbors are going to be like, yeah, for sure, I totally that sounds
only
real
some of the times.
Yeah, so that's kind of where the series jumps off.
I feel like, you know, it would be a very interesting way to take, like, a direction to take the story is like, is the light beast even real, like, or is this like CRT vision that, you know, she's seeing the world in just a symptom of something else? Like, I love when comic books play with reality like that. So I don't know what you're planning, but that's what I'm kind of thinking this is gonna go.
She definitely has to deal with that a bit, and it you know, that vision thing too, it really comes from I want to make sure I shout out Donna's art, because I'm doing it with the artist Donna Black, and she just has a really beautiful, unique, haunting kind of horror style to the work she creates. And we've talked about this series for maybe 4 years now. And so we toyed with the script some, we've passed it back and forth. She's done some kind of character designs and, you know, started moving forward late last year. But her style was really kind of helped shape the story and what it ultimately has become, because it's so unique. And so, you know, there's is almost a sort of ethereal, staticky vision to any of the comics she works on. There's just something really unique and haunting in just the basic way she functions as an artist. And it's wonderful.
Will you be alternating like art styles between, to like differentiate between the static vision that she sees and reality, or, you know, her normal vision?
Yeah, so there's the panels where we're in her vision like that look different.
Mm-hmm.
With Donna's style, I mean, there's you're certainly like in a kind of different vision already when you're reading anything she's drawn. But there's a couple different things happening visually that create that style and put you in Magda's vision.
What really like pulled me into, you know, this book was just like the art being so different than anything I've seen both in like indie spaces and the mainstream comics world. So that alone gets me hyped up, because I love seeing, you know, people pushing the medium in different ways. And that's exactly what you're doing. So I'm like all behind you here, like supporting you all the way in any way that I can. And what I found very interesting is that we have both like shared something in, you know, making comics, in that we both write poetry and we both incorporated that into comics as well. So I would love to know more about your other works.
Yeah, so I a poet as well. Have it. My last book was called In the Office Hours of the Polar Vortex, which actually incorporated some art in it too. There's a lot of scan art involved in it. I used to run a literary magazine called Indigest for about 9 years. Was an editor there. I've published in a bunch of places, and yeah, poetry was. It's what I went to school for too. It's just kind of always been part of the life. And getting more into comics writing over like the last 6 years or so, seeing those opportunities where there's overlap between comics and poetry is really exciting. I know there's not, it's a small world of that.
Very it's a small world.
I feel like one of the interesting things when you see comics and poetry working together is there are certainly communities. I absolutely don't want to minimize any community that's happening and the publishers who support that, which are mostly, you know, individuals. But there's also just like, so it's so small that you kind of get a lot of people who are kind of functioning on their own. And, you know, it creates really interesting, like little pockets.
Yeah,
like
definitely a pocket.
Person has evolved their own thing, like kind of in the absence of, you know, if you write comics, like you're inevitably seeing Neil Gaiman or Marvel stuff and DC stuff. And it just evolves a little differently. And, you know, for me, it was when I was deep in poetry and working and publishing it, and you know, one poet who's great, Bianca Stone, I did like collage poetry and comic poetry, and it was one of the first times I think I really was like following someone doing that and was like, this is just gorgeous and I like the way this interacts. And you just get all these kind of surprising juxtapositions when you work with something like that. It's great.
For my debut comic book, Luthromania, I wanted to incorporate poetry with comics because I love poetry so much. I grew up writing poetry and comics has always been like a passion of mine as well. So I wanted to like bring those two worlds together. And I was like, I'm already doing something niche, which is indie comics. And then I'm adding poetry to it. Who the frick is going to buy this? So I ended up like deciding to release the comic book for free and just like promoting it as much as I can and get the word out about it. And I've been very fortunate. It's like I found some really great reception. Like people really, you know, connected with it, and they would find something unique and interesting in like mixing poetry with comics, especially in like what I did. So I was really appreciative of that, and that is giving me a lot more confidence working on my next project, which also, you know, has poetry and prose in it. That I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe there is something there. Maybe there is an audience for what I'm trying to do. So I feel like, maybe I'm not out there doing really weird shit that no one is interested in.
And that's kind of with how much I think you can miss some of that, that process of discovery and finding those people when comics has become so big. I mean, you guys talk about it all the time on your podcast. It's inevitable. Like Marvel's everywhere. Even yeah. like a quarter of the shows Netflix puts out feels like they're based on a comic book. But that they're still like in comics, there is that process of discovery, and like you can find things that just make you go, what the hell? I've never seen anything like this. This is amazing.
I feel like we only cover most of the time Marvel and indie on here, like some DC sometimes, but like we really don't really cover outside of the indie world, like really independent creators, like self-published creators, which I think something that being on the indie Twitter space and like in comic books in the community, I have been seeing so many phenomenal pieces of work out there that I just look at it, I'm like, how the hell is this not published by Image? You know, like I have a really good friend, Al, who has a brilliant comic book called Husk, and it is one of the prettiest comics I've ever seen. The art style is like very Cartoon Network meets Disney, and it's so professionally done. And they do everything themselves. Like they're the writer, artist, colorist, letterer, everything. And they put it out on Ko-fi. And I'm like, you should be pitching this. Like this should be out there in the world. Like I want to highlight these books, and I'm really glad that I'm getting an opportunity to talk to indie comic book creators so I can maybe, highlight their projects as well. So, I'm really happy to be talking to you and maybe spotlighting your work.
Doing God's work there. I think that all the time. When I'm like, even this week, I was rereading a couple that I really liked. Ultramax, which I think got picked up and was put out
by Source Point. No, by Source Point Press, I think.
Yeah,
Yeah, I know the creator, Doug Wood.
Yeah, Doug's an amazing guy.
Yeah, big hype.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. They're doing a Kickstarter too soon. And I think, yeah, this is the one I actually edited two stories in that, the new big hype that's coming up.
Okay.
Yeah, just saying, Commander Rao, Bigfoot Knows Karate is like,
you are literally mentioning my friends, like Fellhound and Dan Price are both my friends.
I don't know Dan at all, but I do love, I really, really enjoyed Bigfoot Knows Karate.
It's a really good book.
The cover on that was like, how do you not buy this? This is amazing.
It's actually an award-winning cover at this point because it won a contest.
Oh, wow.
And Fel is a brilliant writer. Like I've been lucky enough to meet these incredible creators on Twitter that have been like amazing resources for me as well. Like getting into the medium, and because, you know, when I put out Eleuthromania, that was my very first comic book. So I had lots of like trials and tribulations trying to figure out my way and my footing. And even in the creation process, like how do I deal with editors? How would I deal with artists and all of that? And I've been very fortunate that the community is very welcoming and warm. Like they don't want to, it's not like a competition. They don't want to like put each other down to rise up. It's like kind of a mentality of like a rising tide lifts all boats. So everyone is happy to share whatever information they have and just help each other out. And I really like, it warms my heart seeing people that out there that are just trying to make comics and make friends. That's it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for a lot of comic book readers, they see that stuff and they're like, why isn't this with a publisher? Why, like, am I, you know, why would I take a risk on this stuff? And I think it kind of misses, like, one of the like things that excites me most about reading comics compared to a lot of other forms is that just that feeling of taking your shot and just going for something. Because there's a, you know, when I write about comics, I think of like these, Wonder Woman Historia, for example, right now, it's just like every page is incredible. This is a super tight story. The art's incredible. It feels almost perfect, but I can enjoy that just as much as some like weird indie comic that you're just like, no, this isn't perfect, but you're not going to find this anywhere else. This is like Bigfoot Knows Karate, seeing Bigfoot do karate. Like they made a story out of this that is fun, it's engaging, and you're like, where else are you going to see this? There's nowhere else in the world.
There's no other medium that's going to greenlight something like this because, you know, it takes budget, it takes, you know, of production. So comics are like really the easiest way to tell the story that you're passionate about in the way that you want to. And I love that about the medium.
Yeah, it's, you know, when I do the our best comics of the year list at Thrillist, and I struggle with that sometimes because I think of some of the comics that I'm like, man, you took your shot at this, even from bigger publishers. And like one that comes to mind right away was Beyond the Breach from Aftershock last year. It was just like, every page is gorgeous. This is so weird, so out there. I like one of the comics I was most excited to read, like every time a new issue came out. And it's not maybe like the most polished, perfect thing in the world, but it just was so exciting and beautiful that like, yeah. It's the excitement of comics.
So when you cover for Thrillist, you mentioned you have your yearly or quarterly, is it? Best graphic novels and comics?
Yeah, so we update it throughout the year. So usually every month or two, there's like a little bit of an add-on. So we kind of slowly keep it rolling out throughout the year.
And do you cover mostly like big two or big three on those, or, you know?
You know, I try to be all over the place. And what we've got up, I have up so far for this year is, you know, not a whole lot of Marvel DC stuff. It's, you know, we got something on there from the Substack. It's fine. It's fine. Just understand. Wow. The Wordless, The Forest that came out through Fantagraphics by Thomas Ott, who does like, is it carving? I can't remember his process, but they're prints that are just unbelievably gorgeous. So I try and like, you know, I take it seriously to the in the way of like, I want to see a lot of different stuff. I want stuff that excites me. I try to look all over. I try to look at web comics. I try to look at smaller publishers.
That's really nice.
You know, I want it. You know, I think anytime you do a list like that, especially you know, a lot of the stuff at Thrillist that winds up being a list, and because we have great movie writers and that they do some list stuff and they're usually a collaboration, and this is just me doing the comics thing. So I try to make sure like it's, you know, it's my opinion. This isn't you know, some deity coming from on high and deigning that these are the only comics that are great. You know, it's that process of discovery. And I, you know, I definitely keep up with the big two. I probably don't read them as much as a lot of comics writers. You know, I keep up with it, but I definitely get more excited by creator-owned stuff, indie stuff. Doesn't always get reflected in there. It's, you know, it's just kind of a...
No, that's the market, unfortunately. No, the big two dominate the market, or the big three dominate the market for good reason, because they are the most popular out there. But that doesn't negate the quality of a lot of good stuff that's coming out that's independent or from small press publishers.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think, you know, sometimes too, those where creator-owned stuff that gets through, kind of breaks through the noise, is often to the big writers and artists from Marvel and DC's, you know, side projects, other work, stuff they're not to dismiss any passion behind it, and it's probably what they're most passionate about. But you know, there is that kind of chain of command that feels like that it rolls down, and you're like,
it gets to a popularity contest at some point as well.
Yeah, and it, you know, a lot of times it's great. Like, I'm not going to be disappointed to read like another Jeff Lemire comic. But there's always 40 a year, but like
he is a machine. I swear, this man never takes a break. He has so many new comic books coming out every other month. I'm like, how do you keep up? I can't keep up with his releases. Like, you know, I literally cannot keep up. I don't know how he has the time.
Yeah, I can't read his comics as fast as they're coming out.
He's doing like a whole horror universe right now, like a, you know, like interconnected world. And I'm just like, I haven't even read Little Monsters number one. Hold on.
Honestly, that universe was kind of exciting. The Free Comic Book Day release from that was really cool. It was beautiful and just like super haunting. I was kind of hoping the passageway was going to be a continuation of that story, which it isn't. But that was a really cool one too. I feel like that'll get slept on and left behind, but that was a great one shot.
I'm going to have to read that. I'm so behind on even my weeklies. Like, my pull list, I'm like 5 weeks behind at this point, because people don't realize this, but making comics is a lot of work. Like, a lot, especially when you have a day job. It's just like, you're a team manager, you're a coordinator, you're a producer, you're everything at the same time. And you just have to like keep all those threads at the same time. It's just exhausting. And so, yeah, sometimes comic books fall down the wayside for me and I can't catch up with my TV series or my video games. And I've just been like, I don't know what I'm doing with my time except making comic books at this moment.
Yeah, I don't know about your listeners or where everyone's at, but like that is so true, that you just get buried in that stuff. And I forget it sometimes because you talk to other comic creators, you're living in this world. And the Kickstarter has been kind of a unique opportunity of like talking to friends outside the comic book world who are like, yeah, I want to buy an issue. And you start talking about the process. And I had someone yesterday be like, so you write a story and then you spend like the next year being a general contractor? Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, the financer, the general contractor, team manager, everything. Like, and you have to keep up with every step of the way. Like, and the worst part about it is the waiting for me, is because I'm very hands-on. So whenever like an artist is, I'm like, send off pages to an artist, I'm just like, okay, now I wait. And I wait. And then the pages are ready. I'm like, awesome, love them. Send them to the letterer. And now I wait. And you know, so it's just like a lot of waiting. So I really want to like, I don't know, I want to maybe learn, get into lettering or editing just so I can be more hands-on or something. I have no idea. But let me ask you this. Why did you decide to release Magda as a, you know, on a Kickstarter instead of like pitching it to a publisher maybe?
You know, part of it was kind of what you talked about with Donna's art, you know, and she's had a ton of success, but I think we were trying to do something a little different. Still very much a comic book and exists in that kind of world, but it's either that's the fastest path to just being like, okay, let's do this. And, you know, previously running a publisher or, you know, writing poetry, which poems take a long time, but like, you know, you kind of send this out and their publications are going there. That slowness of the comics world, definitely you feel that sometimes, and you're like, I want this story. I want to share this story. I have the excitement about it now. So doing this now is kind of a bit of harnessing that like excitement and just saying like, all right, let's just get going on this. Like I want to be moving.
Have all the power to you. Like, you know, you're holding all the keys to the kingdom and you basically can have the freedom to do what you want. Instead of adhering to a publisher's schedule or release schedule or something like that. I get that.
Yeah, and it was just felt like the path to go with this, just to run with that excitement and keep feeling it, and you know, using that on the next project too, of just like, all right, so working on something else now. And you kind of, I like to have, I keep myself very busy, and I like to have those kind of different projects in different stages, so that I'm doing, while I'm just doing kind of project management on something, I'm writing something, and you don't lose that kind of momentum and excitement. And
I'm literally the same. I'm like working on Etheris right now, which is in, you know, making good headway with it, and we have two other projects I'm also working on, and I'm scripting the fourth one. So I'm always looking ahead, and I'm just like, I gotta keep going, and I want to keep building momentum, because, you know, because things take such a long time, I want to try to like minimize the release window between issues as much as I can. So hopefully, you know, I'll be able to keep that. What the hardest part is honestly just financing the whole thing, because I'm doing it on my own budget. I haven't kickstarted anything yet, and like since I put my debut for free, I haven't really made that much money off of it. I did sell some like physical copies and digital copies that for people who wanted to support the project. But at the end of the day, I'm still paying everything out of pocket. I didn't even come close to breaking even, which is a thing that, you know, is a very like a big financial responsibility to take upon you. And I'm hoping that Kickstarter for you will be able to like kind of lessen that burden as well.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, part of the decision to do it too is, I mean, kind of a little in the weeds, but like, you know, just experimenting with that. You know, previous job, we'd used Kickstarter for some stuff, so I had some experience with it years ago, but kind of wanted to see it in this publishing space too, because yeah, it's an expensive thing to be doing. Comic book publishing is not cheap, and you know, I don't know that Kickstarter is the best solution for indie creators. I think everyone's kind of got to find their own way through it, because it's not like an equitable system. It's incredibly expensive and hard to do.
Yeah, especially like when it comes to delivering physical rewards to backers internationally, it can be very tiresome. I have a very good friend of mine, Michelle Abinader, who did the Color of Always campaign, which was a huge anthology. And they have basically like, I think 700 plus backers who are all over the world. And just having to package everything, like reward by reward, the add-ons, what people ordered, everything like that, it was exhausting for her. And she like had, her hands were like full of paper cuts at the end of the day, just working on those. So it's a struggle. People don't really understand how much work it is.
Yeah, when you're, you know, a creator functioning as publisher as well, you're really putting a lot of love into that project, which, you know, I think one thing when people aren't used to seeing that stuff on Kickstarter can be, you know, cause some sticker shock. Cause I mean, you go to the comic book store and you're like, oh, DC Black Label is $6. And that's really expensive. And you're like, what? I mean, they've got all these resources that are able to tamp that price down. And when you look at a creator and you're like, I'm going to pay $8, $10 for a single issue. I've just bought basically a magazine size one that's I think it was about $20 that I buy every time they put out, and it's like, you know what, that's a lot, but it's a very reasonable price in comics, because, you know, everyone deserves to be paid through this. There's, I think, writers sometimes when they're helming the project don't think of paying themselves, because you're like, we got to make sure the artists and the letterer and the colorer are paid properly. They're doing a lot of work. It's work.
For yourself, you're like, if I can't break even, if I can't make any money off this project, I'm okay with it, as long as the rest of the team members get paid. But you kind of like want some, you know, some capital, so you can like actually finance the next project or the next previews. And it's just like a constant circle. This turned very quickly into like complaining about how heartbreaking comics is. We love this. I wouldn't be doing any other medium. I freaking love this. I went to film school, and I would much rather be making comics than making films any day.
Films, and set. I worked on film for a little bit too. Sets are so boring. This is just a lot of sitting around, huh?
Yes, absolutely. But it's, I feel like it's worth it at the end of the day. It's very fulfilling for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no complaints. It's all complicated, but it's great. And I'm incredibly lucky to be able to be doing any of it. And to have found people to work with who, you know, I love working with Donna on this, and Letter Squids too. They're just awesome. I worked on it with a few projects and just the best. Can really elevate the writing and art in special ways. And I'm very excited that they're working on Magda as well.
So how did you get into comics as a medium, and what really was like the inspiration, if you could, if there were any, behind Magda?
Yeah, so I started writing comics for the first time probably about 6 years ago. And I had primarily been, you know, I'd written some short films. I'd written lots of fiction and poetry that had been in like Best American and other spots, and was kind of like, had a story I wanted to do that felt like it was a comic. And started just kind of in a backwards ass way, just like being like, okay, so how do I reverse engineer this? What do I do? And it was a huge project. And of course, you know, like, I feel like anyone who writes a lot and then is like, I'm gonna do a comics, like, okay, well, I have this 9,000 page opus. I was like, okay, so maybe realizing what it really took, and like talking to some artists I knew and just being like, okay, so how long does this take you? What is it like? How much work, how much labor do you put into a single page? And trying to understand that, and was like, okay, so let's do something else. So like, let's decided to do that story in a different way, but it kind of ignited this, like, oh, you know, this is actually like a really interesting, it felt for someone who'd like jump from scripts to short fiction to poetry, there was a connective thread between those that I didn't feel with comics. It was writing something totally new and like a different kind of challenge. Mm-hmm. And so I connected with an artist who had a project he wanted to do and was like, I just really need someone to write this. And it's a large graphic novel that we've been working on for quite a while now, and are getting close on. But that was kind of the first thing. And then I was like, all right, so like, that's a very specific thing and like this big project, and I've been buried in this. But so I started doing some anthologies and did some work with Comic Jam, which, if you don't know, they do one page comics. It's a ton of writers and artists and letterers who take prompts pretty much weekly, and, you know, spend like a writer spends a week on it, artist spends a few weeks on it, and they post them pretty much weekly on their website. So I started doing some of those just kind of by happenstance. And that kind of got me going. I'm like, all right, I'm going to like do a lot more anthologies and stuff. I really want to play with this medium. So I made a big thanks to Comic Jam and everyone who's there, because it's just, it's a fun playground, is really kind of what it is, for so many people, who a lot of whom have like gone off and done really cool stuff, and new people come in, and even the people who are there are just like doing awesome projects on the side, and you get to kind of see that in process. So yeah, that was a big part of that. And so Magda was actually, the story was one of the earlier ones of like a good pile I've started on writing, and had talked with Donna about it, and we just kind of set it aside while we were working on other stuff for quite a while, until it was like, you know what, you know, like, let's just do this. Let's just, you know, we've talked about it a whole bunch. There's a whole bunch of options of how we can do this. You can start sending to publishers. You can, you know, do all these different things. And it was just like, you know, we both have a moment right now. Let's just do this. So yeah, it was kind of how this all got going with Magda.
Sounds incredible. I feel like, you know, a lot of creators, when they first get into them, dip their toes into the medium, they're like, I want to do the next saga, and it's going to be like 120 plus issues, epic story. But I, you know, it's they don't understand how big of a toll it is. So it's always best for like anyone starting up to like do something like the Comic Jam or bunch of anthologies or a one shot, or, you know, heck, even like a collection of stories, like mini stories. What they're doing right now is like one or two mini pages. So I'm glad that you're finally doing like a big 3-issue project, and I'm really excited to seeing that come to life. And I hope, you know, you have like lots of more stories in the same realm with Donna in the future.
Yeah, I hope so too. I've enjoyed working with her, and I know it's such a weird space. Even like when you like something, even you mentioned Saga, you're like, man, I'd love to see you two like do like three, four more different series and keep this going. And not always how it works out, but yeah, I've really enjoyed working with her, so I hope so.
You literally never know what the future holds at this point. You know, comics is such a big field, and you know, it just takes the right person to see your work to maybe open up doors for you. So hopefully, you never know.
Yeah, and then you also get the thing where you're like, oh, but there's also like, you know, this artist is really cool. I really want to do something with them. And, you know, your eyes get a lot bigger than your life allows. But yeah, there's a lot of already like now, like they're all popping in my head. Like, yeah, and I want to do a project with them and them. And
I have so many friends that I'm like, I would kill to work with you. But like right now I'm working with Dennis. And Dennis Menhir, who was the artist on Etheris, we've been working together on this project for like 6 months now. And I'm so obsessed with his work that we already planned like two other projects that we want to work on together. And like, I don't want to work with anybody else. Like your style just like fits me like a puzzle piece. And I just like would love to work with you for the rest of my life. But at the same time, like, as you said, so many amazing artists out there that I just want to always create with as well. So I'm going to keep my branches open.
Yeah. I mean, when you start to really feel that, it's interesting to look around and you know, you're talking about like the Bone Orchard mythos with Jeff Lemire and the Andrea Sorrentino, and you're like, okay, well, they did Gideon Falls together and other stuff. And you're like, it's awesome. I want to see you guys do a ton of stuff. But also to know that moment where you're like, okay, no, I want to just keep working with this person. Like it fits a puzzle piece for you.
Yeah.
Or like, well, no, I want to do something totally different. It's like two very different exciting feelings.
It's really about creative synergy, you know, finding the right partner and like, you know, working with them on something that makes you happy, because working with different artists, it definitely feels different. Like there's a relationship kind of being built with every artist that I work with. And I have my favorites, you know, I have those people that I would prefer to work with again in the future. And those, I'm like, I love your work. We're good friends, but maybe creatively we just don't vibe that well. So I would like to explore other avenues. So it's always like building friendships and building relationships, and those partnerships it's a very important aspect of making comics as well.
Yeah. I think we get lost in it too. I'm probably guilty of it as anyone in, you know, kind of attributing creatorship to someone in comics when it's such a vast collaborative platform.
Absolutely.
It's film too. I mean, it's very analogous to that. There may not be, you know, 600 people working on it like you have in a giant film, but like attributing it to one person is such a dangerous thing when you realize like all these little moments along the way when you're really collaborating and working well with someone that you can't even start to attribute some of these little things to anyone because you're just having this discussion and going back and forth and like, oh, maybe the hair should be longer here. Or
right.
What if this light a little, or move the bus stop over here, you know, like it's just these little things that, you know, when you're reading and you're like, wow, look at all the decision in this panel, like really makes this like emotion hit home. And you're like, what got them there could have been like 5 hours of conversation and no one's ever going to know that. They couldn't tell you who made that decision anymore. You know, it's really beautiful. You know, it's this wonderful collaborative process. And
it really takes making comics to appreciate comics in a way, because as you said, like that one panel that really hits you home, you know, someone could just like read it and like flip to the next page and just move on. But when you're like making comics, you appreciate all the effort that went into it. And you're like, holy crap, like something deep happened here. Like there's a story behind this panel alone. And I get that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the letterer gets left out of that often. I know there's definitely been panels that have worked in comics I've done where the letterer comes back and is like, you know what? I think we got like one dialogue bubble too many here. Like you're gonna like how this fit flows a little better if we just cut one. And I look at it and you're like, all right, let's cut this line. And you're like, actually, that was a great line edit. That wasn't even about the visual. Like this panel hits now. Like that line needed to go for other reasons. Also yep. Your letterer reasons, but also my writer reasons. And that was because the letterer made that happen.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's been such a pleasure talking to you, and I would love to keep going for a lot more. But, you know, I really appreciate, you know, your time, and we really hope everyone checks out Magda. I will be linking it in the description for this episode. For anyone listening, if you would like to keep in touch with Dustin, Dustin is available on Twitter at @DLukeNelson. Is that correct?
That is. That's where I live.
That's it. So please give him a follow and check out Magda, because it is one of the most beautiful books, as I said, that I've seen in recent years in the space and the general space. And it has 17 days to go. So by the time this episode comes out, which will be on Sunday, it will have 16 days to go. So you have plenty of time to check it out, mull it over, and hopefully back it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I love
my Geekable. Absolute pleasure. And for anyone listening, please give us a follow over at Geekable. We're most active on Instagram at Geekable_podcast, but you can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at NS_AbdulHaq. And thank you for listening.